Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
My wife and I couldn't be any more different, at least as far as our dress preferences. My wife calls me the underwear author when I'm not seeing a client. Yes, I am in my underwear and happy that way. And when I'm seeing clients, yes, I realize I got to put on the uniform to have some credibility. But I am certainly not Mr. Fashion Plate. I have about three pairs of shoes. Barbara has 77. But Barbara has some actually rational business career-oriented reasons for being more cautious about what you wear. And in fact, can defend the idea or wants to defend the idea of dress codes at work. I, as you might gather, have, say, a more laissez-faire approach to dress codes, and I thought you might find it interesting, if not actually informative, to hear both sides of the debate. And what Barbara and I do is we have kind of an innovative, we've come up with kind of this innovative way of debating. Instead of me taking one side and she taking the other, then which confounds the fact, makes it seem like, okay, who's not, it's not necessarily whose ideas, which idea, which side of the argument's better, but who's a better debater. We each take both sides of the argument. We start with Barbara taking one side and I take the other, and then we switch. And I take the other side and she takes the other side. So you get to hear both of us present both sides of the argument. So we're going to do that about the notion of dress codes on the full continuum. I mean, a dress code can be as little as, you know, no nose piercings in the workplace to, on a more extreme basis, you know, everybody's going to wear a uniform like flight attendants do or whatever. So we'll try to cover the full range. But now I'd like to cover the full range of introducing my wife, who I am always so proud of. What a woman. She's really come so far. She was born in a Bronx, and like I was, in a low-income kind of area. Grew up in a, you know, in a pretty, let's just say, pretty low-income surroundings. And now she's not only the superintendent of schools in her 14th or so year at the Napa County Superintendent Napa County Superintendent of Schools, but she won Superintendent of the Year a couple of years ago, Woman of the Year a couple of years ago for her congressional district, and now she's on the cabinet of the State Superintendent of Schools. So it is always my great pride to introduce my wonderful wife, Dr. Barbara Nemko. Barbara, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much for that more than generous introduction.
You're welcome. Deserved. Not one word of BS in it. So, all right, you're the honored guest. So why don't you take the affirmative first? Why don't you make the best arguments you can on for why a dress code in the workplace is a good thing?
Absolutely. Well, there are two kinds of dress codes, so let's start with that. There's the kind of dress code that says you will wear this. If you work in a doctor's office or a lab, you will wear white, or you will wear a printed smock if you work in a pediatrician's office. And the reason for that is because I think if you work in a lab situation, it looks clean. You don't want people wearing the clothing that they wear outside because contaminants can ride in on your clothes. So there are reasons for things like that. If you're they're not stewardesses anymore. If
flight
you are
attendants.
An airline attendant, a flight attendant, you wear the uniform of the company so that people know who you are and they don't stop stray passengers in the aisle asking for another Diet Coke. But I think in most offices, when we talk about dress code, it's more about just being sensible. And in an ideal world, this is going to make me sound very old-fashioned and conservative, and that's probably appropriate, but in an ideal world, we wouldn't have to say these things because people would use their common sense. But that doesn't always happen. So there are things that we say, for example, in our office, we say, you can't do anything that creates a health and safety hazard. beach-style flip-flops. Notice we don't say flip-flops because they're too popular. Everybody wears them. But the really crummy kind that people trip themselves over. Oversized jewelry, very baggy, loose clothing. Things that show too much. You can't be showing your underwear in the workplace. If you stand up or you bend to get something on the floor and all your underwear is showing, no good. Spaghetti straps, strapless clothing, sheer clothing where people can see through, skirts shorter than 4 inches above your knee, dirty clothes, clothing with holes, and then things with slogans or body piercings or other things that are either vulgar or inappropriate for the workplace. So that doesn't seem like it's excessively restrictive, but it does help to create a professional environment. If people come into our office, we want them to think they're coming into an office, not that they walked into the neighborhood supermarket.
Okay. Is anything more you want to say? It sounds like you stopped. So, because you're on the phone, I can't tell you. Are you done?
Well, I wanted to stop because people don't want to listen for too long in a row. Yeah, let me add a couple of things.
Yeah, because the way we're working it, just to remind our listeners, you're going to lay out all the arguments you can, pro, then I'm going to try to take the counter position, and then we're going to switch.
Okay? Yeah.
So go ahead.
I think that if you look like you respect the place that you're in, you are treated with more respect. If you look like you rolled out of bed to come to work, then that's the way you get treated. And I think we're also, particularly in the field of education, we're supposed to be role models. We're supposed to set a good example for students. And this is not to say that I want teachers to come in suits and ties like they did when we went to school. That's obviously at the extreme position of how to dress. And people can come in jeans and sweatshirts and look wonderful and professional. I go to lots of schools where teachers are dressed that way. But the jeans are pressed. The sweatshirt is unwrinkled. They look like they gave some thought to what they put on before they came in. This is not to say a teacher is not a good teacher. I was in a class recently, and the teacher was wearing shorts and a T-shirt that was kind of wrinkled, and it was a wonderful teacher. But I still think that you should look like you respect your students, you respect what you're doing, and therefore you prepared to come to work. You didn't just fall in.
Okay. Thank you, Barbara Nemco. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. My very special and frequent co-conspirator on the show, Barbara Nemco, and I are debating the question about the wisdom of dress codes in the workplace. And so Barbara has made arguments in favor of dress codes, and now I'm going to rebut her position. Rather than presenting my own arguments on my own, I'm going to simply respond to the things that she said, and then we're going to switch roles so that you get to hear both sides of the argument from both of us. Okay, so first point I had to disagree with, this notion of wearing white, even in a lab. Contaminants are no more, you talked about the reasons for wearing white is it avoids contaminants. There's no more likely to have something contaminated if you're wearing white versus colors, although perhaps if you're required to wear a uniform that you come into the office and you have to put on a white coat provided by the organization that has been sanitizedly cleaned, I suppose I can understand it. But you said it comes down to the argument for a dress code comes down to a common sense, a matter of being sensible. I'm not convinced that that's necessarily true. Now, we have to distinguish between what's for teachers who have access to the kids and those who are in your office. You have 200 people who are behind the scenes. So most of the people who work for you are behind the scenes. So I'm going to list just a few of the things you mentioned and say why I think it is absolutely unnecessary to have those kind of restrictions. Beach-style flip-flops, I mean, if somebody trips over their shoes, the odds of that, first of all, one in a zillion. That's not the kind of, you know, that doesn't seem to rise to the level of danger that you should impose a restriction on them. Baggy clothes, I mean, that is a style. It could even be called racist. There are certain economic groups and racial groups that love baggy clothes, and couldn't it be seen as racist, and, you know, at least narrow, to insist that people don't wear baggy clothes? Spaghetti straps, my God, that's really scared me. I mean, that's pretty standard clothing. What's wrong with a little skin, especially in Napa where it's hot? Why should people have to wear more than the minimum? And heaven forbid they show a bit of cleavage. Does the world really end? Is the credibility in the workplace, is the professionality of the workplace diminish? Slogans. Do we really think, I mean, do we really want that kind of sensitive? If somebody is a strong Obama supporter, they shouldn't be able to wear an Obama T-shirt in the workplace, or a Romney supporter, or a pro-choice supporter, or something like that? Maybe so. Maybe it creates too much dissension. But I would rather err on the side of free and open expression than saying no slogans. I might ask people to think about whether that would have, you know, whether the net impact on the workplace would be negative, but I certainly wouldn't want to make it a code. And finally, body piercings. Young people today, body piercings are quite standard. And so to say no body piercings or no tattoos seems to be unfairly biased against the young, which is merely stylistic. It has very little, if anything, to do with the professional credibility of the organization. Now, with regard to teachers, I suppose then I'm more agnostic, but I still would argue against dress codes. I'll tell you why. Very often, the thing that makes a teacher effective is not necessarily that they establish authority and that there is a distance, but very often what makes a difference in children's lives is intimate connection. And so the teacher who does not try to separate him or herself from the students, but rather tries to show informality so that maybe the student would open up to that teacher, care more about that teacher rather than see it as purely an authority figure, might be a good thing. Now, yes, some teachers who may feel they have classroom discipline problems may feel a need to set up a little more of a distinction between themselves and the students, and they might opt to dress more formally. And I'm absolutely fine with that. But I don't think it should be a code to take the choice either way out of the teachers. Does that make sense?
Well, it's my chance to rebut.
Yes, please do.
And yes, of course it makes sense, which is why I said it comes down to common sense. And because common sense, as they say, is no longer very common, sometimes we have to paint with a broader brush. So let's start with some of those things. You talked about beach-style flip-flops, and perhaps they're not dangerous. Have you worked in a workplace where people are clomping down the hall and all you hear is slap, 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 slap? It's like everybody's running around in their bedroom slippers, and it's a most annoying sound.
And aren't you exaggerating the degree of disruption to the workplace? The cost of forcing people by code to not wear flip-flops? My wonderful board operator engineer just told me that there are young, it's an age thing. Women in the 20s and 30s are wearing flip-flops all the time, and she has seen a young woman accepting an award at the White House wearing flip-flops. Are you not just being intolerant of generational difference?
Perhaps, but most people were appalled when we saw that video of the young woman accepting an award at the White House in flip-flops. There are times that it's appropriate and times that there aren't, and because people can't tell the difference, sometimes if you want to have a workplace that looks professional, you need to say you can't do it. Let's take all of the things that we talked about. Yes, in terms of white in lab coats, I have no problem with colors in lab coats. It can be pink or blue or whatever. It's the issue of lab coats, and that is because you want someone who wears something that they don't wear out of the office if you're working in a lab, so that you know that you're not bringing in the outside contaminants. So yes, color is fine. That's why I said if you're in a pediatrician's office, you're probably going to wear a printed smock, but it's the same principle that you're wearing something only worn in that office.
Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. Is there more you want to say? Because I think this is a good time for us to switch sides of the argument.
I'm not done yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. Please go ahead.
I have a few more things I
want
to say.
I want to hear. At least I want to hear them. Go ahead.
Okay. So body piercings. Body piercings would be fine if somebody has a nose ring. It's not a big deal. The problem is that there are people who have 12 body piercings all over their face, and you can't even pay attention to what they're saying because you're so mesmerized.
Oh, come on. Are you not exaggerating? I just don't think that's, you know.
Just a tad. Only a tad.
Come on.
That's why we have a policy. The cleavage. You're not going to a nightclub. There is no reason to be in a workplace where you're showing a whole lot of cleavage, and then somebody's going to stare at your boobs, and then you're going to claim that there's a sexual harassment going on.
All right, I want to respond to that one, if you don't mind me.
Okay.
Some people, I feel like it's such an invasion of individual choice. You know, some women are very proud of their bodies, and cleavage is something that makes them feel better about themselves. They, you know, just like you care about your hair. You tell me yourself, you feel better when you have a good hair day. Well, some women every day feel good about the fact that their body is great, including a bit of cleavage. And if somebody dares glance down, the world doesn't end. Is it not, you know, should it not be left to the individual to dress in the way that he or she is going to feel most confident and comfortable in the workplace?
Once again, the issue is there are laws against sexual harassment. And if somebody decides to file a lawsuit, it's going to cost us a bloody fortune, and we're going to have to go through all kinds of dealings with attorneys. I'm not saying that a tiny bit of cleavage would not be okay, but if we say that, somebody's going to come in and it's going to be inappropriate. And again, all we say in this is we reserve the right, if we feel that someone has violated the standards of professional dress and grooming, we reserve the right to say to the employee, you will need to go home and change what you're wearing and come back in an acceptable workplace attire. That's why, otherwise, we would have no basis on which to say, you're not looking appropriate today, you really need to go home and change.
Well, I honestly, personally disagree, but I want to let you have the last word on this. And we're going to switch sides. And I'm now going to make the best arguments I can make for a dress code, and you can make all the arguments against dress code. But
okay.
First, I would like to, this is a special day, a unique day on KALW. For any of you who like work with Marty Nemco, this is your, and Barbara Nemco, who is a frequent co-host or whatever you want to call it here on the show, this is the only time in the next 6 months for you to have a chance to show your support. That's what determines whether we stay on the air or not. And we don't get paid, but the station costs a lot to run it. So we're trying a new experiment. We started last year, short pledge drives. So short pitch breaks, I guess they're called. So if you would like to support work with Marty Nemco, every dollar does that. And you would like a thank you gift, which we love, by the way. This is a one-time, wait till you hear this one-time opportunity. We're doing a brunch where you can have, you and up to 15 of your friends up to 10 of your friends can come have brunch with Barbara and me here at KLW and watch the show on November 11th for $1,500. If you have that kind of money, I know that's crazy for a lot of people, but if you do and you might find it the ultimate party, you can have 10 of your friends come and have brunch, and voila. If that's steep, and I certainly understand that for most people, you know, for some people, $1,500, they wipe their nose with $1,500. But for other people, that's a fortune. But if you would like to have brunch with Barbara and me, it's $150, which doesn't go to us, goes to KALW, supporting public radio. If you love public radio, no commercials, that's great. $150. And all you need to do is call 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-KALW-917, or go to KALW.org. And if you're a couple, it's $275 for a couple. And if that's too steep, $75 will give you not only the good feeling of being a member of public radio, supporting a work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, but it'll get you an autographed copy of my new book, How to Do Life, What They Didn't Teach You in School. 1-800-525-9917. We're going to keep this very brief. 1-800-525-9917. Barbara Nemco, you make one comment, and then I'll cap it off, and then we'll end this pitch break.
Yes, this is your opportunity to show that you like you like the program. If you listen to it and you get good tips and it's helped you to get a better job or get a salary increase, a very nice way of saying thank you is to call in, even if you pledge a minimal amount. We don't expect 10 people to call in and order the entire brunch for 10 people. You can, for one person, $150, two people, $275. It might be something for parents of a newly graduated college student who can't find a job, which is sad and too often these days. Maybe you want to invite your child and 9 of their friends or 7 of their friends, because you also would come, and Marty would be very happy to give them some tips in how to get a toehold in the job market. But come 1, come 2, come 10, we'd love to meet you and see you right after the show on November 11th.
And it's fun. 1-800-KALW-917, 1-800-525-9917. And a challenge has just come in. Franz Latko and Lewis Feldman has just offered a challenge. If you will donate to KALW and support work with Marty Nemco, $250. That is, in other words, if a couple, two of you want to come for brunch, they will match it. So your money will go twice as far. Thank you very much, Franz Latko and Lewis Feldman. 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-KALW-917, or KALW.org to support work with Marty Nemco, and importantly, public radio. And as promised, we're going to keep that pitch break short in respect for you.
One question, though, quick, a clarification. You said on the challenge $250 for two people to come to brunch. We were
No. I didn't say that. No. I said that's the amount that they've chosen to double. So if you buy brunch for a couple, either you pledge $250 or you come to brunch for $275 for a couple, they will kick in an additional $250.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay. So now back to the show. For those of you just joining us, we are doing a debate on the question of the appropriateness of dress codes in the workplace. And we started by having Barbara take the affirmative. And I took the negative and said no. And now we're going to switch. And I'm going to make all the arguments I can in favor of a dress code. And Barbara, you're going to make the arguments against.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I'm going to start with a kind of a traditional argument. If you are a boss and you are going through whatever it takes to start a business or to run a business, you've invested your money, you've made that effort to start this business, you should have some right to say you would like your workers to dress a certain way, either because you believe it would attract more customers, create a more professional impression, make you feel prouder about running it. Simply, and it could be simply preference. Nobody is forcing anybody to work there. So, but obviously, it can't be a ridiculous dress code, but some kind of a dress code saying, for example, no torn shorts, and we don't want it. We don't want no cracks, as they say. Nothing that shows a lot of cleavage or your butt when you're bending over. You know, maybe a quite reasonable kind of a dress code. You know, you're paying them. You should have those reasonable rights. You're not doing anything that's harassing. So that would seem to be a reasonable argument. Very often, I mean, businesses. It's one of the ways you can increase profit. If there were two workplaces. One, for example, in which, let's say it's I'm making up a simple example, but let's say it's a candy store, and you have some people who are there in their pierces and their tattoos, and one is wearing a weirdo T-shirt showing all, cleavage, as you were talking about, or just weird styles and baggy, etc. And the other, everybody seems, dressed in something that's very pleasant and even a uniform. That was that conveyed. This is a candy store that really takes its product seriously. I would imagine that the place without the dress code might have trouble staying in business. So that's an argument for it. It also shows how much respect customers and coworkers will give you. For example, even though I at the top of the show, I love to be informal. When I'm writing and I'm not seeing clients, or I have clients by Skype or phone, I'm very often in my underwear. Barbara has called me the underwear author. But when a client comes in for career counseling, I don't wear a T-shirt. I don't dress up formally, but I wear an open, a collared shirt And if it's cool, I will wear a sweater and a pair of chinos or something, which says that I take my job seriously. It provides a little more credibility in the same way as when you come into a doctor's office and the doctor wears a white coat. You know, it suggests that he is being, or she, of course, is being professional. Similarly, imagine you went into your bank and you're trying to figure out whether you should deposit $10,000 in a bank or invest in, you know, in Merrill Lynch. If somebody's wearing, if you're wearing a T-shirt, let alone one that isn't ironed, you know, you're less likely to feel that your money is going to be stewarded well. It could be irrational, but there is some, we look to all sorts of cues as to whether we should trust a particular business to deal with. I also, a friend of mine, his name is Steve Rude. He is an attorney, and he is like me. He doesn't give a crap about getting dressed up, but he does mediations or when he meets with lawyers. We took a walk last night with Einstein, a couple of nights ago with my doggy Einstein, and I was shocked. I see him, and he's in a suit. And I say, what's with the costume? What's with the getup? He says, well, I was doing a mediation. And isn't it true that if you, for example, were in a divorce mediation or a big business mediation, wouldn't you feel nervous if the guy showed up in, you know, in T-shirt and cut-off shorts instead of in the suit? We know it's a costume, but isn't there some rationale for it? And so those are some arguments in favor of a dress code. Okay, Barbara Nemco, now you make the arguments against a dress code.
We're not children. We don't need to be told how to dress. We're all adults. We understand that when we come to work, we should look like we're coming to work. It's demeaning to have a dress code that we have to follow. Nobody is going to decide that they want to do business with us, and I guess I tend to think more from the public sector because that's where I work, but they're going to do the same business with us if we're wearing a T-shirt or we're wearing a white shirt and a tie. They don't really care, so that's ridiculous. Styles have changed. Who are the people making these dress codes? They're mostly people of a different generation, and so they don't understand the way that people dress today. What if they want to say that everybody, all women should wear pantyhose? You can't even buy pantyhose anymore. Nobody wears them. So it doesn't make any sense to have silly rules like that. One of the silliest I ever heard is the no crack rule that one of the offices had, which included not only did it mean you can't have cleavage showing or cracks in your butt because your pants are so low, but you can't show the cracks in your toes. So shoes have to cover your toes. Ridiculous. It's hard even to find shoes like that today. So it's just a control thing, and there's absolutely no reason to be doing control in the workplace. People are quite capable of dressing themselves, and they should have the right when they go to work to feel relaxed, to feel to dress comfortably. There's nothing comfortable about showing up at work in a suit and a tie or pantyhose and high heels. Give people the freedom to dress comfortably and feel more confident because they're expressing themselves.
Okay. I want to end this part. We're going to try one thing more, one more kind of an exchange. I want to talk about uniforms because they represent a very specific kind of dress code. And I would like to argue for uniforms in a far wider range of workplaces, merely as a thought experiment. I'm not sure how realistic it is, but I think it'd be interesting. I'd like to lay out the argument, and I'd like you then to lay out the counter-argument. Okay? Barb?
Okay, sure.
All right. Well, I noticed, you know, I went one time to buy you some cosmetics, and I went into Sephora. Sephora is a really beautiful cosmetic store. And all of the workers there were black and white, something like that. And it created, you know, because remember, makeup is a whole world of image. It's not real. It's about impression. I walked in there, and it was, I have no more sophisticated word to say, it was cool to see the whole place decorated in black and white and all the people in black and white. It was an experience just walking in there. Well, you know, that's a uniform. There's a good reason for that uniform. Similarly, for example, obviously, as you said earlier, flight attendants, it not only does it help the patrons know if they need to ask somebody something, who is in charge, it creates a sense that everything is organized and in order. And there are some people, not me, but used to be you, who were afraid of flying. And seeing that sense of order, that everything is taken care of and that everybody is in a neatly pressed, nice uniform, suggests a sense of coherence, that they've all been trained the same way, that it gives you confidence that things are going to be run professionally. Another advantage of uniform is it costs less, because you don't need to have 20 different kinds of suits. You need two or three, you know, just enough to change so that it's not smelly or dirty. Two or three of the same uniform. It takes less time to shop. It takes less time to get dressed because you're not tortured over whether you should wear this top with this skirt and with this scarf and this pin and this. You've got this uniform. I note, for example, that Albert Einstein bought several versions of the same suit. And he said, why? My brain power is better used on my work. Similarly, Steve Jobs, you know, you see him always in the black turtleneck. He's got about 9 zillion black turtlenecks because he said he doesn't want to waste his time worrying about that, and it also created a brand. So it costs less, takes less time to shop, takes less time to get dressed. That's a good reason for a uniform. And also, let's even take, you know, it's very easy to argue in favor of a uniform, for example, when there's public contact, like a flight attendant. But let's even say behind the scenes, like in your office, at Napa County Office of Education. Now, I know it's not realistic, but if everybody had to wear a uniform, there is a sense of self-confidence that comes from people feeling it's like they are part of a team, and that feels good for a lot of people. That's why baseball players, they could all go on the field in their T-shirt and shorts. They're individual. They all wear a uniform. It makes them feel a part of the team. It's also, now I'm going to make kind of a liberal political argument. You know, there is, unfortunately, among many people, a competition of who can dress the coolest, who can dress the nicest, who can have the most expensive shoes. Especially for low-income people who can't afford to keep up with the fashion race, or people who are fashion-impaired who just don't have great fashion sense but could be fabulous employees. If you got to wear a uniform, there isn't that ridiculous game. And it makes it more likely that an employee in the workplace is going to be judged on his or her merit rather than looks. We all know we're lookist. Studies have shown that handsome men with full heads of hair who are, you know, are much more likely to get promoted, and attractive women than people who are not attractive. So by taking the getting dressed, the fashion aspect out of it, it makes it more likely that merit is going to be encouraged. A couple of more points, and then I want you to respond. There is so much petty competition among people about who can look better, not necessarily on the job, but they tend to make fun of each other and sabotage somebody who isn't looking as good. It would reduce that. And it does, as you pointed out earlier, if everybody is in, like, today's flight attendants, no cleavage is showing, everything is very, very, it's not tight, it's very asexual, if you will, it does reduce the likelihood of sexual harassment, which, of course, is a good thing, period. So I think that on the merits, requiring a uniform in more workplaces than currently exist might net be a good thing for the world. At least that's my argument. And now I'd like you to take the other side of the debate. Or you can agree if you really feel that way. What do you think?
Well, I think you made some really good arguments. So there isn't too much I can say against it, except that it is a restriction of freedom. Most people like to express themselves in the way they dress, whether it's in color or in being fashionable or showing off the fact that they have a good body by wearing clothes that adhere to their shape, not necessarily tight or terribly form-fitting, but showing that they're in good shape. I think the idea of having that sense of cohesiveness that you would get in a dress code can just as easily be done if people wear a name tag with the company logo. That gives everybody that sense of being part of a bigger organization without restricting what they wear. And most people are not in contact with the public. As you pointed out earlier, in my office, for example, we have a lot of people, many of whom work in offices where on a daily basis they're not really interacting with members of the public. So why should they have their freedom taken away by having to wear a uniform? I think in the situations we outlined earlier, it makes perfect sense. I think for kids in school, uniforms are a great thing, and I know lots of parents don't agree with that, but uniforms today, which are really just limiting the color combinations and the type of clothing. So it might say you can't wear the colors red and blue, very popular gang colors, and so your color palette is beige and green and black and white and yellow. That does make it easier for parents to shop. It takes away the kid competition and who's the coolest. So now I'm making your argument. So I better quit while I'm ahead.
Okay.
Well, let's not restrict people's freedom. Not everybody comes in contact with the public. People should be allowed to dress comfortably.
Okay, dear listeners, I hope you've at least gotten a good sense of all sides of the arguments around dress codes, from the most minor, from tattoos, all the way to full uniforms. Normally, we would go to the phones right now and invite you to weigh in on which side of the arguments you think is most persuasive. Alas, this is our pledge drive. And the KALW pledge drive, and so we can't do that. But we're trying this wonderful experiment that I am totally on board with, keeping the pledge breaks very short. So we can only do that, though, if you pledge your support. If you do like work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko, you like to hear us go back and forth on issues. We obviously differ on lots of things, but we try to do it with respect. If you like hearing that, if you like my doing my 3-minute career makeovers on callers, this is your only time to support it. And there is a $250 challenge grant. So if you pledge your money, it's going to be matched by Franz Latko and Louis Friedman. 1-800-KALW-917. That's 1-800-525-9917. And if you'd rather not talk to our friendly volunteers, you can just go to KALW.org and pledge that way. This really is the only time you get a chance to do that. And we want to give you 2 thank you gifts that will hopefully encourage you to call now during this only time you can call to do that, which is come to see us for brunch. We have a lot of fun on November 11th. You can come to the show on November 11th and sit in and watch Barbara and me do our thing. And then afterwards, we have a lovely, fun brunch, an amazing networking opportunity. So many people have come to these brunches that we've done before and either gotten a job, gotten great career advice, even a personal relationship. 1-800-525-9917. It's $150 per person, or if you come as a couple, it's $275. And again, remember, if up to $250 is going to be matched by wonderful KELW listeners. So this is the perfect time to call if you like work with Marty Nemko. If you hate work with Marty Nemko, you should not call. But every dollar you pledge now is a vote.
You should not be listening.
That's right. If you do like work with Marty Nemko, this is the time to show your support. This is how they determine which shows stay on the air and do not stay on the air. So 1-800-525-9917, KALW.org. Barbara, is there something you'd like to add?
Yes, I think people can't underestimate how important it is to show your support. Even if it's not with a large dollar contribution, please call in and pledge during this hour, because that shows you would like work with Marty Nemko to stay on the air. If you're listening, it's probably because you get good advice from the show, because it's helped you. So this is a way of saying thank you. 1-800-525-9917 or KALW.org. And given the challenge, what a wonderful opportunity. So whatever you contribute will be doubled.
Yeah, up to $250, being completely candid. But if, you know, these kind of, if $150 is too much and you don't want to come to brunch, for $75, you will get an autographed copy of my new book, How to Do Life, What They Didn't Teach You in School, my best ideas regarding career, but also about relationships, about money, about health, and the meaning of life, life's questions, all in 150 easy-to-read pages. That's How to Do Life. So 1-800-KALW-917, 1-800-525-9917, or just go to KALW.org. And as promised, our goal is to keep these pledge breaks under 2 minutes, and so we have done so out of respect for you, because as a listener myself to public radio, I am grateful when those pledge breaks are short. And if you can contribute, we will be able to continue these experiments of very short pledge breaks. Okay, now on to another topic, dear listeners. Many people, frankly, who listen to the show are over 40, over 50, over 60, or over 70. This is not like certain commercial radio stations where it's the 12 to 25 demographic.
What's wrong with the over 80s? They're not listening?
Well, but they may not be looking for career advice.
Okay.
Well, you know, we laugh, but actually my father worked until he was 82.
Yes,
and,
he did.
And, you know, if the business that he was working for hadn't closed up shop, you know, we would have continued working there. It would have been hard for an 82-year-old to in the job market even back then. So, but, no, there are people, you know, may I be granted the continued good health to work another 30 years. I'd like to work till I'm 92. So you're absolutely right. This advice could be relevant to people 80 or older as well. So what I did was, in preparing for today's show, I tried to think about what kind of best way to offer good advice for older workers in the workplace. And so what I did was I created a self-appraisal quiz, if you will, or inventory, that I'm going to give you now. It's 8 questions to help you kind of evaluate yourself. You maybe want to use it, you know, on your current job as a professional improvement plan. Or maybe if you're a job seeker, you may realize that you have a great strength in one of these areas that is often thought of as a weakness among older people, and you may want to preempt the objection to you, say, energy level, by talking about the things that demonstrate how high energy level you have. Or you might certainly, if you identify as a weakness, you may decide you want to say, okay, this is something I need to work on, or I just need to grant myself a little forgiveness and accept myself. Maybe I don't have the same amount of memory as I had when I was 40 or 30 or 20, but I need to forgive myself because I've got these other attributes. All roses have thorns. We need to embrace ourselves for our flower as well as our thorns. So there's lots of reasons why you might benefit from this self-appraisal for workers 40 or older. Applies to anybody, as Barbara said, from 40 to 90. And Barbara, what I'll do is I will ask them, and I would like you, if you're willing, to be as candid as you can be in self-appraising yourself on this criteria. But dear listeners, you might want to pull out a piece of paper or whatever, and rate yourself on this self-appraisal. And you can rate yourself, give yourself a letter grade for each of these: A, B, C, D, or F. A is that you're great. F means you're terrible, of course. And just rate yourself. The first one is...
Well, you just blew my cover. Now everybody knows I'm over 40.
Well, you barely look it. You sure? Hey,
yeah,
you played a couple of years ago. You played a 29-year-old romantic figure, right? And you played a 40-year-old sex pot as a in a comedy on stage, right?
Just do the words stage makeup have any meaning?
Hey, you could put as much makeup as you want on me, and I'm not going to look like I'm 40. So you look 40-ish. Okay,
all right, go on.
Okay,
let's do the quiz.
The first item is being technologically up to speed for your kind of work. You don't need to be a programmer if that's not your work. But for the kind of work you do or want to do, is your technological competence, would you give it an A, B, C, D, or F?
Whoa, I'd probably give mine a B.
Okay, and you can either say, okay, that's good enough, we can't improve on everything. Do you want to say, I accept myself as having a B, or is there something you want to do to improve your technological competence?
Oh, I constantly try to improve. I go to the Computer Using Educators Conference. I go to the big one. I go to the little one. I go to the local one. I've had private appointments. I do keep trying, but it doesn't come easy to me. Not being a digital native by a long shot, it's hard going, but I do have an iPad that I use. And the other piece is, even if you're not the greatest technologically, you can't afford to put your hands over your eyes and your fingers in your ears and go, no, 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 no. You have to keep trying, and you have to look as though you know more than you know. So, interestingly, when I first got my iPad, I did it because I felt I needed to model that we're moving to technology. And when I started using it at meetings to pull up agendas and to take notes, people thought, wow, she knows technology. Maybe I better learn to use it too. So you can do a lot with a little.
Okay, let's go to question number 2. On the older worker self-appraisal form, which again is useful whether you're on the job and trying to maybe embrace your strengths, find weaknesses, or if you're a job seeker, it could be very helpful in planning how to address those in your interviews and deciding what kind of job to apply to. Number 2, rate your own self on your ability to handle cognitively complex matters. In other words, complicated arguments, either to formulate them, to understand them, whether it be in writing or whatever. Some people, as they get older, are less able to handle cognitively complex things. Barbara, how would you rate yours?
A.
Great.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't had a problem with that.
You sure don't. I'm amazed every time you tell me about the complex problems. You know, people criticize me for praising you too much in the show, so I'm going to shut up. Okay. Number three on the self-appraisal, your memory. You know, remembering things, appointments, remembering facts, remembering word finding, simply memory issues. What would you rate yourself?
A minus. I think that some of the what we attribute to memory, you miss an appointment, is not memory. It's that your world gets so complex. When I think about how simple my life was in the 20s in terms of the issues I was involved in and where
not the
I
1920s, your 20s, yes.
Time, it was a piece of cake. Mm-hmm. I pretty much went to work and maybe once a week I would go to some meeting of some kind and it was very easy to keep it straight. Today, I may go to 7 meetings in a day and multiply that by the week. It's very hard to keep life straight, so that's not necessarily a memory issue. Yes, we all have those times when the word doesn't come. You just suddenly go blank on a word or a name. And I think there you have to accept that that does happen to people as they get older, but it happens fairly early, so it isn't a sign that you're over the hill. And I think if you don't make it a big deal, other people won't. If you just laugh and you say, well, here's a senior moment, or whoops, brain freeze, it's people just roll with it.
Yeah, it's true. It's like a physical disability. For those people who, you know, wear it, you know, with pain, people are uncomfortable with their disability, they're more likely to judge you poorly. But same thing, if you forget something, you forget something. And that's a really good example of something where you need to embrace your own, your whole package. You know, yes, I will forget some things more than I used to, but I like to think that that's been replaced by a certain measure of wisdom and experience from having, for example, been a career counselor for so long. So, yes, I think... you know, of course, we always hear, you know, things like, you know, Alzheimer's and, you know, cardiovascular dementia and all that stuff. And so we get scared. It is fairly normal. The joke that I like people say about how do you know if you really have Alzheimer's or your early signs of Alzheimer's, you know, losing your keys, you do not. If you forget what a key is for, you need to start to worry. Okay, number four on the self-appraisal of for older workers, physical energy. You know, do you score yourself an A? In other words, do you have about as much energy as you did when you were 35 or 40? Or are you finding that you really, and everybody fades a little bit in the afternoon at all ages, but, you know, what would you rate your physical energy at?
A plus,
right. And so, but if you're not, let's say for dear listeners who are not an A plus, you know, there is nothing wrong with needing a nap. You know, there are studies that show that top business executives take 15 to 20 minutes in the middle of the afternoon. If you need a nap, or God forbid, even two as you get older, that doesn't invalidate your value. But often it's sleep issues. It may, you know, when you were younger, you may have been able to get away with pulling an all-nighter or fooling around until 3 in the morning. But now, as you get older, yes, that's the kind of thing that's fixable. You may not be able to rejuvenate all your energy that you ever had, but yes. Make sure you've got a good sleep ritual so you're getting the 6 or 7 hours of sleep that even older people need to fully function. And a cup of coffee won't hurt you. In most cases, they say that a cup or two or even three a day actually may be a net positive in terms of your energy. So at work, feel free to use coffee, perhaps again subject to what your doctor tells you. Use coffee as a way, especially, for example, even myself, when I have an important meeting, let's say I'm feeling a little, you know, just a little low energy or whatever, maybe a little even fatigued, I will say, okay, great time to have that cup of coffee. There's nothing wrong with it. Okay, next item on the older worker self-appraisal questionnaire, drive. A lot of people have a lot of drive when they're young, not because of physical drive, but they're idealistic. Young people generally have not been burned by the world yet. They're not seeing how difficult it is to change the world. They feel the world is their oyster. And some people, when they get older, start to feel, it's not going to make that much difference anyway. I'm not going to, I don't need to work that hard anymore. I worked hard and it didn't pay off that much. And yet, too much of that attitude can make you truly a less valuable person in the workplace and also make your life feel less meaningful. So, Barbara Nemco, as you rate yourself from A to F on your drive, how hard you're willing to work, how committed you are to work, what would you rate yourself?
A plus.
Yeah, I think so too.
I had the opposite effect. Mm. I think when I was younger, I had less confidence in my ability to change things and less confidence in being willing to step out and say, I really think we need to do something about this. The older I am and the more, one of the other things that you bring to the workplace when you're older is your connections. You have met everybody. You know everybody. You know who to call on for different things. You know who to get as allies. And so I have a very different and improved sense that if I really tackle a big issue, I can change it. I can fix it. So my drive is way higher than it.
Yeah, but Barb, I think yours situation is anomalous. You know, you've risen to a very high level, so you can feel efficacious. I think a lot of people, by the time they reach their 40s, 50s, or 60s, have topped out. And they may not have topped out at the top. They may be an admin. They may be a dishwasher. They may be having been fired or laid off, you know, because they were replaced by a 20-something, and now they're in a lower-level job. And so it's a lot harder to find drive. And I guess what I would say to those folks is this. It's not a competition either with your past self or with anybody else. But the meaning of your life is in part a function of how much you contribute, whether you are a dishwasher, a clerk, or a CEO, or somewhere in the middle. So try to find the value in being productive, and maybe in a way that you couldn't when you were younger. There is no question when you're older, you do have more perspective and you do have more experience. That is, although it's a cliche, but it is a good time to make part of your drive being a mentor, being what's called, what Eric Erickson called transgenerative, passing on what you know to the next generation. And so that can be a way of finding new drive. When you find some young person that you would like to champion, that can be a way of restoring some of your own drive, because it's exciting to be passing on to some younger person to think that you're going to leave a legacy. Make sense?
I think that's a really good point. I think all of us, without question, have the wisdom that comes from experience. So think about those years that you've lived and experienced things and seen things as a plus.
Okay, next question, question number 6 out of the 8 questions on this older worker self-appraisal form, a questionnaire that I've cooked up here, is how willing are you to be compliant? So many people, when they're 20, are so grateful to have a job and see a paycheck, they're willing to work for 70 hours a week. They're willing to, you know, how high, how deep, sir, or ma'am, whatever you want, sir. And very often when people always say, I'm tired of the stupid corporate game, I'm not willing to play that stupid game anymore. And to some extent that, you know, and I can certainly understand it, I would feel that way myself, but if you choose to work in a larger, you know, in an organization of any size, especially, you know, and even if not, if you've got a younger boss, you're going to have to get used to, you know, being compliant to some extent, to enough of an extent that you're not fired. How would you, Barbara Nemco, and this, of course, dear listeners, this is for all of you, I'm just using Barbara as an example because she's the person who's here with me. How, you know, you have rule, even though you're the superintendent of schools, you have mountains of regulations that you have to follow, and a school board that has certain dictates to you, and a state superintendent has dictates to you, and federal regulations. How do you feel you're sufficient? How would you rate your degree of sufficiency in compliance with all those rules, A, B, C, D, or F?
Well, for me, it's not really a choice, obviously. I have to comply with the rules and regulations. And sometimes I am not happy with it, but it's just not a choice thing.
Really, you know, I got to tell you, that's why I could never be working in an organization. I would flout every rule that I thought was stupid. For example, I remember back when I was a teacher, my kids were all low-income kids, and there was no way that I was going to get parent permission slips from them 30 days in advance, which is a stupid district rule. All I did is I had a small class. I had these really difficult, special ed, tough behavior problem kids. I simply stuffed them into the – I had a hatchback. I stuffed them in the back, no permission, no nothing, and I got fired.
Yeah, you would be fired in a heartbeat.
Right. I can't deal with that crap. I hate rigid things that are hurt kids. Is there no room for that maverick kind of person in the world of education? As a side note, I'm just curious.
Yes, but you do it differently. You would work with your principal to see if you could do negative permission. In other words, you tell the parents you want to take them on a field trip, and if they don't want their child to go, then they have to put that in writing or see if you can work out some kind of an arrangement like that. In terms of stuffing them into your car, no way, no how. That was a safety hazard, and you were lucky.
Yeah, okay. Next question. Question number 7 in the older worker self-appraisal program, and we're running pretty much out of time, so let's do this quickly. We talked about technology, and one of the things that some older workers don't do well, they don't stay up on technology, but there's other forms of being current. Current according to management style. Today, being hierarchical is considered a horrible no-no. Are you up to date in the knowledge in your field? How would you rate your, and I'm talking to dear listeners now, not just Barbara, how would you rate how current you are in the non-technology aspects of your profession, your career? Barbara?
Well, I think I would give myself an A because I read all the time to find out what's going on and what are the new strategies and what should we be doing. I think you need to do that if you don't want to be irrelevant.
Last question, number 8, which is something I alluded to briefly earlier. Number 8 is, how would you deal with a younger boss? Or if you have a younger boss already, how do you judge them on your merits? Do you find yourself really, letting it affect how well you're working with that younger boss? Barbara, I know you don't have a younger boss because you're the boss, but if you had a younger boss who was, say, 30, do you believe you would judge him on the merits, or would there be a certain kind of resentment because you're a bit over 40?
Yeah, bits. These days, you have to deal with younger people. As you get older, obviously, a larger percentage of the people are going to be younger. I don't judge people at all by their age. In fact, sometimes I'm surprised when I think about certain people who I consider colleagues, and I realize they're our daughter's age.
Yeah.
So you just deal with them in terms of their competence.
Okay.
One of my very best employees is a 40-something, but absolutely wonderful, knowledgeable. What has age got to do with it?
Isn't 40-something old? Anyway, we are just about out of time.
So right, that's in the old category.
Yeah,
sorry.
Let me quickly just run down. So the items on the older worker self-appraisal thing, which may be useful to you in your career, your technology, are you up to speed technologically? Are you up to speed non-technologically? How are you handling cognitive complexity? How is your memory, your physical energy, your drive, your caring about work, your compliance with rules and regulations? How willing are you to deal with a younger boss? Hopefully that's going to be useful for you. As you plan the next stage in your career. Before we leave, I've got to ask you for money. This is the last time. If you care about Work with Marty Nemco, this is the time to pledge. $75 gets you, $50 is the basic membership. $75 gets you a signed copy of my new book, How to Do Life, What They Didn't Teach You in School, which is my very best ideas that I've acquired over my entire life. Or $150, you come to brunch with Barbara and me. On November 11th and at the station, and you get to see the show if you want. $275 for a couple, 1-800-525-9917. Each dollar is a vote not only for public non-commercial radio, but for Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. Every dollar determines, in some sense, whether my show stays on the air. If you like it, this is the only time. We've only got a minute left. This is the time to do it. 1-800-525-9917. We need 5 more pledges to make the goal. And that goal is important, again, if you care about Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, 1-800-525-9917 or KALW.org. Barbara, you have a last 30 seconds worth of pitch, if you will.
Yes, if you call, we'll be able to do the amazing Sally Field. You like us. That's what it's about. It's showing KALW that you like the show. And if you're still listening, you must like it.
And come to brunch. Come to brunch. I swear brunch is totally fun, the ultimate networking opportunity. Very fun. You get to give us input onto the show. You get to see us doing the show on November 11th.
And you get to ask questions. You can have a career makeover right on the spot.
So, 1-800.
Please come. Please call in. Please pledge. And again, because of the challenge grant, any amount that you pledge up to $250 will be matched. So you're doubling your contribution. Even if you can't afford to come to brunch, $50, $75, okay. All appreciated. And it's a vote for Work with Marty Nemco.
1-800-525-9917. That's KALW. And that is Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and of course, all of you for listening. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do 3-minute career makeovers on callers. And when I was in charge of creating the list of America's best careers for U.S. News, the career that scored highest was optometrist. What's it really like to be an optometrist? I'll talk with a great one, Larry Sarver. Till next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco for Barbara Nemco, reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.